Welcome to the April 4th, 2024 episode of Blood Podcast, your source for innovative ideas and cutting-edge information. Our topics are based on articles published in Blood, a journal of the American Society of Hematology. First on today's podcast, molecular mimicry in aplastic anemia. Novel experiments show that antigens associated with viral infections can mimic epitopes presented on hematopoietic progenitor cells. This drives aplastic anemia, as T cells target and eliminate hematopoietic progenitor cells. Up next, prophylaxis with subcutaneous emicizumab in infants with hemophilia. Treatment was well tolerated and efficacious in the primary analysis of HAVEN 7, the first clinical trial of emicizumab, enrolling only infants. Finally, hydroxyurea is associated with a significant reduction in infections among children with sickle cell anemia in Uganda. After starting treatment, children had 60% less severe or invasive infections, including malaria, bacteremia, respiratory tract infections, and gastroenteritis. Let's start with our first research article. Virus-reactive T cells expanded in aplastic anemia eliminate hematopoietic progenitor cells by molecular mimicry. The first author is Amin Ben Hamza of Charité, Universitätsmedizin, Berlin in Germany. Aplastic anemia is a rare immune-mediated syndrome characterized by hypocellular bone marrow and pancytopenia. Approximately 70% of cases are considered acquired or idiopathic. These cases respond well to immunosuppressive treatment, in contrast to hereditary cases. It's presumed that T cells mediate the destruction of hematopoietic stem and progenitor cells in this syndrome. That's inferred from observations of clinical responses following immunosuppressive therapy. That is to say, in most individuals, blood counts recover after administration of thymocyte globulin and cyclosporine A, with or without electrombopag. A substantial body of data now indicates that T cells play a key role in the pathophysiology of aplastic anemia. Various aspects of T cell dysregulation in aplastic anemia have been reported. These include increased frequencies of T memory cells, increased Th1 differentiation, and clonal expansion of effector memory T cells, as well as associations with specific HLA haplotypes and polymorphisms. Despite this evidence, it's still not clear what's driving clonal expansion, and the specific molecular targets involved are not fully understood. It has been frequently hypothesized that exposure to certain viruses is a predisposing factor to the condition. And viruses associated with aplastic anemia development have included Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus, hepatitis, and others. In the present study, Ben Hamza and co-investigators sought to determine whether expanded clones recognized antigens presented on hematopoietic progenitor cells, and also whether target epitopes were associated with persistent viral infections. The research team used single-cell sequencing and immunophenotyping to determine clonal bone marrow T cell expansion and associated immune phenotype in the bone marrow of 15 patients with acquired aplastic anemia. Their work, as published in Blood, reveals that in bone marrow from patients with aplastic anemia, T cells exhibit oligoclonal expansion and CD8-positive cytotoxic effector differentiation. That was shown in various stages of the disease and in the setting of treatment with immunosuppression. To study this further, they re-expressed dominant T-cell receptors, or TCRs, from some patients in reporter cell lines. These studies revealed three key features of the clones. First, the dominant CD8-positive T-cell clones can eliminate hematopoietic progenitor cells. Furthermore, the clones persist with relatively little change over time in terms of the relative clone size in the lymphocyte compartment. And finally, the clones can react against virus-related epitopes. This was demonstrated for Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus, and other common viruses. The investigators identified several T-cell receptors that recognized antigens presented on hematopoietic progenitor cells. In vitro, T-cells transduced with those TCRs eliminated hematopoietic progenitor cells in the patients from whom they were derived. Finally, an expanded T-cell clone from an Epstein-Barr virus seropositive patient was used to target CD34-positive cells in healthy Epstein-Barr virus-negative bone marrow. The expanded clones eliminated hematopoietic progenitor cells in an antigen-dependent manner. According to the authors, these findings provide evidence that molecular mimicry of viral and self-epitopes can drive T-cell-mediated elimination of hematopoietic progenitor cells in aplastic anemia. In agreement is commentary author Amy E. DeZern of the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. DeZern says this study by Ben Hamza et al. Provides elegant proof-of-concept data of the undisputed role that T-cells have in aplastic anemia pathophysiology. This work, she adds, provides evidence for viral targets as drivers of clonal expansion of T-cells, using Epstein-Barr virus as a typical example. However, these findings might not be generalizable to patients of all ages, she adds. The median age of the patient in this study was 56 years, while the disease is common in younger patients. Furthermore, many of the samples were taken from patients who were not treatment naive, so prior immunosuppressive treatment could have influenced the results. Will these findings change practice? Current guidelines for aplastic anemia already suggest viral testing, and current treatments, including immunosuppressive therapy, appear to work regardless of the underlying cause, viral or otherwise. However, these findings could be helpful to both patients and providers seeking an explanation for a disease that is often described as idiopathic. Studies like this one, DeZern says, provide far better mechanistic explanations for the T-cell-mediated attack of bone marrow stem cells, possibly due to an antecedent viral illness. DeZern concludes that future studies should include identification of other potential target antigens for unbiased identification of other T-cell receptor targets causing marrow failure, such as drug-induced aplastic anemia. The next research article is Emicizumab Prophylaxis in Infants with Hemophilia A, Haven 7. Primary analysis of a Phase 3b open-label trial. The first author is Stephen W. Pipe of the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Hemophilia A is a rare X-linked hereditary bleeding disorder caused by a deficiency of factor VIII. Patients with hemophilia A are at risk of joint, muscle, and soft tissue bleeds, often in the absence of injuries or trauma. The magnitude of bleeding risk is inversely correlated to the degree of factor VIII deficiency. Those patients with factor VIII levels below 1% are said to have severe hemophilia A. They have a high bleeding risk, even from an early age. Prevention of bleeding, that is to say, prophylaxis, is the key goal of treatment in hemophilia. Ideally, prophylaxis should start when the patient is very young, before the onset of complications and joint bleeding. In the short term, intracranial hemorrhage is the most serious bleeding concern. Without prophylaxis, infants with hemophilia A have a risk of life-threatening intracranial hemorrhage 33 times higher than infants without hemophilia. But recurrent joint bleeding is also of great concern, as it may over the long term cause chronic damage and lead to disability. So, it has been argued that infants with severe hemophilia A should receive preventative treatments very early in life. However, in practice, prophylaxis is often delayed. That's because conventional prophylaxis involves regular intravenous infusions of factor VIII. To facilitate such infusions and reduce treatment burden, a central venous access device, or CVAD, is often used. CVADs can be associated with infection and thrombosis. So, to avoid complications of CVAD use, prophylaxis is often deferred until the patient reaches 1 year of age, when peripheral veins are generally more accessible. Today, however, prophylaxis that does not involve factor replacement is an option. Emicizumab is a recombinant, humanized, bispecific monoclonal antibody that is administered subcutaneously. With this route of administration, prophylaxis can be initiated at a very young age, thus reducing bleeding risks and avoiding CVAD-associated complications. Prophylaxis with emicizumab is indicated for hemophilia A patients of all ages based on the results of the Phase 3 HAVEN clinical trial program. To date, investigators in these trials have enrolled and treated a wide range of participants, from children to adults, those with mild to severe disease, and those patients with or without factor VIII inhibitors. The present clinical trial, now published in Blood, is the first to focus specifically on infants. It's called the HAVEN 7 study, and it includes individuals up to 12 months of age who did not have factor VIII inhibitors at the time of enrollment. In this phase 3b single-arm trial, infants with severe hemophilia A and no inhibitors received subcutaneous emicizumab at 3 mg per kilogram for 52 weeks. Treatment was given weekly for 4 weeks as a loading dose, followed by maintenance dosing every 2 weeks. After 52 weeks, participants could continue at 3 mg per kilogram every 2 weeks or switch to an alternate dosing regimen for the follow-up period that will encompass 7 years. Efficacy endpoints for the study included annualized rates of bleeding, while safety endpoints included adverse events, thromboembolic events, thrombotic microangiopathies, and immunogenicity. The report on Haven 7 in blood includes a total of 55 male patients, with a median age of 4 months at the time of informed consent. The median duration of treatment, as of this report, was approximately 100 weeks. The annualized treated bleed rate was low, at 0.4. More than half of patients, 54.5%, or 30 of 55 subjects, had zero treated bleeds. In the remaining 25 subjects, a total of 42 treated bleeds occurred. All bleeds were related to trauma, that is to say, no spontaneous bleeds were observed. Nearly half of patients, 49.1%, or 27 out of 30 subjects, did not require factor VIII infusions. No intracranial hemorrhages occurred during the trial. 9 patients, or 16.4% of all participants, had an adverse event related to emicizumab. These were all grade 1 injection site reactions. None of the adverse events observed in the study led to changes in treatment. There were no thromboembolic events, thrombotic microangiopathies, or deaths in the course of the study. No participants tested positive for anti-drug antibodies, while 2 participants were confirmed to have developed factor VIII inhibitors. Altogether, investigators say, indicate that emicizumab is efficacious and well-tolerated in infants with severe hemophilia A without factor VIII inhibitors. Also in blood is a commentary on these results. It's called A Treatment Bridge for Infants with Hemophilia, and the author is Thomas C. Abshire of the Versiti Blood Research Institute and Medical College of Wisconsin. In the commentary, Abshire says Haven 7 is a novel and practice-changing study. He says the results demonstrate a high level of safety and efficacy for emicizumab in children less than 1 year of age with severe hemophilia and no factor VIII inhibitors. However, the longer-term follow-up data being collected in Haven 7 will be important to further assess safety and prevention of complications. In particular, longer-term data is needed on the effect of injection site reactions, the development of anti-drug antibodies, and any new safety signals that may emerge. Longer follow-up may also provide insights into the impact of emicizumab treatment and joint damage in these patients treated at a very early age. For now, it's clear that the emicizumab in the Haven 7 study virtually eliminated the need for intravenous factor VIII, thus avoiding its side effects, and the potentially disastrous outcome of intracranial hemorrhage was effectively prevented. Altogether, Abshire concludes, this emicizumab bridge in infants adds to the enormous progress in the treatment of hemophilia A that has been made over the past 7-plus decades. Our final article is Hydroxyurea Reduces Infections in Children with Sickle Cell Anemia in Uganda. And the first author is Ruth Namazi of Makerere University College of Health Sciences in Kampala, Uganda. This article is focused on the care of children in Africa with sickle cell anemia. In these individuals, infections remain a major cause of disease burden, hospitalization, and death. Infections are often a precursor to complications related to sickle cell anemia, such as vaso-occlusive crises, hemolytic anemia, and acute chest syndrome. Zinc supplementation may be one means to combat infection in sickle cell anemia. It is known that zinc deficiency, which is common in individuals with sickle cell anemia, can adversely affect immunity. However, the results of studies investigating zinc supplementation to date have been conflicting. In small studies, zinc supplementation appeared to reduce the infection rate in adolescents and adults with sickle cell anemia. However, more recently, we saw the results of a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial called ZIPS, or Zinc for Infection Prevention in Sickle Cell Anemia. That study compared daily zinc supplementation to placebo for infection prevention in Ugandan children with sickle cell anemia. The results, published last year in Blood Advances, indicated that zinc did not prevent severe or invasive infections in these children. Investigators observed that many patients remained zinc deficient, suggesting that zinc dosing used in the trial might need to be optimized. The present research article takes a slightly different tact. In it, the ZIPS investigators have turned their sights on another promising agent for infection prevention, hydroxyurea. We know hydroxyurea is safe and effective in reducing complication rates in patients with sickle cell anemia in Africa. And there is available data, promising but not conclusive, that hydroxyurea also reduces infection rates. For example, data from randomized studies in Africa showed that patients receiving hydroxyurea had rates of infection that were low but not statistically different than placebo. When the ZIPS study of zinc supplementation started in 2019, hydroxyurea was relatively new to the geographic area being studied. So at the time, only 2 of 248 children randomized in the study were receiving the agent. Yet hydroxyurea was subsequently licensed in Uganda for sickle cell anemia. So during ZIPS, investigators recommended it to parents. Many parents had initial concerns about hydroxyurea, but ultimately about half agreed to have their children start therapy. That enabled the present study, which looks at the incidence of infections both before and after starting hydroxyurea treatment. A total of 117 out of 248 eligible children in the ZIPS trial initiated hydroxyurea during the study. Children in the study received locally available hydroxyurea formulations, given at 20 plus or minus 2.5 milligrams per kilogram per day, with dose adjustments for weight or hematologic toxicities. All children were on daily penicillin prophylaxis and monthly sulfadoxine pyrimethamine prophylaxis for malaria. The median age of children on hydroxyurea was 2.8 years, and nearly 44% were male. The average duration of hydroxyurea treatment was 224 person days. After starting hydroxyurea treatment, the rate of severe or invasive infections, including malaria, bacteremia, respiratory tract infections, and gastroenteritis, was reduced by 60% as compared to the period before starting hydroxyurea treatment. That's an incidence rate ratio of 0.40, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.29 to 0.54, and a p-value less than 0.001. Numerically, the incidence of severe or invasive infections was 519.0 per 100 person years before initiating hydroxyurea, and 200.7 per 100 person years on hydroxyurea. There was an even sharper drop in severe or invasive infections requiring hospitalization, which was reduced by 71%, reflecting an incident rate ratio of just 0.29, and malaria incidence was reduced by 72%, with an incidence rate ratio of 0.28. Other results, as reported in blood, include significant reductions in clinically defined infections, including those requiring hospitalization, and significantly reduced incidence of vaso-occlusive crisis and other complications related to sickle cell anemia. All deaths in the study with a known cause were due to infection. These results may be viewed as, quote, glad tidings and joy for children with sickle cell disease. That's the title of a commentary on the findings, authored by Victor R. Gorduk of the University of Illinois at Chicago. In the commentary, Gorduk says the investigators have demonstrated that hydroxyurea treatment in children with sickle cell anemia in Africa not only reduces complications of the underlying condition, but also appears to reduce clinically defined infections and severe infections as defined by the World Health Organization. The mechanisms by which hydroxyurea protects against infection are not clear. However, improved immune function, preserved splenic function, anti-inflammatory properties, or direct antimicrobial activity could account for the effect. The limitations of this report should be acknowledged. It's a secondary analysis of hydroxyurea in a randomized trial focused on a different intervention, zinc supplementation, and compliance with hydroxyurea was not monitored with pill counts. So further studies are needed, not only to elucidate the mechanisms by which hydroxyurea may protect against infection, but also to confirm that hydroxyurea does reduce the incidence of infection in children with sickle cell anemia. Nevertheless, the findings as of today are, quote, indeed glad tidings that should bring great joy to these children and their families. You have been listening to the Blood Podcast. For a list of additional authors, as well as more detailed articles and commentaries on which this podcast is based, please go to bloodjournal.org. be sure to join us next week for another episode. Thank you for listening.